I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Making Cuts. President Trump and Elon Musk forge ahead to shrink the size of the federal government after appearing for questions in the Oval Office. Over the hurdle, Tulsi Gabbard is confirmed as the next director of national intelligence. Faith and finance. Learn all about a new book showing how to create a financial roadmap while sticking to Catholic principles. And the humble Lord. Pope Francis tells the faithful how even before his birth, Jesus made himself our companion on the journey. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, negotiations to end the war in Ukraine are on the way. President Trump making that announcement today after a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. In what he calls a lengthy and productive phone call, the two agreed to work closely together to bring an end to the war immediately by using, quote, common sense. And in a post on Truth Social, the president said that he also spoke with President Zelensky of Ukraine. He says the conversation went well and that there will be a meeting on Friday in Munich led by Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio. President Trump says that he is hopeful the meeting will have positive results. All this comes as Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth visits NATO headquarters in Belgium. Since the start of the war, President Zelensky has pushed for Ukraine to be accepted into NATO, but Secretary Hegseth quash those dreams today.
The United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement. Instead, any security guarantee must be backed by capable European and non-European troops.
On top of upcoming peace talks, we're also learning that another American prisoner has been released, this time from Belarus. However, they have asked to remain unidentified. U.S. officials say the deal was negotiated by Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, who wants a stronger relationship with the U.S. Two other prisoners were also released. And tonight, we have new information about the release of Mark Vogel. We now know who was involved in the prisoner swap. Russian prisoner Alexander Vinnik pleaded guilty last year to fraud charges related to cryptocurrency. He was arrested in Greece in 2017. He allegedly ran a multi-billion dollar cryptocurrency exchange, possibly linked to drug dealers and identity thieves. Vogel, meanwhile, was greeted by President Trump at the White House and is now recovering after several years behind bars. Well, back home, President Trump deals with some bad news about the economy. A new report shows that inflation is unexpectedly getting worse for Americans. It has remained stubbornly above the Fed's 2% target for roughly the past 6 months now. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. Good evening to you. Inflation numbers are up. The CPI, Consumer Price Index, increased 3% in January from a year ago, impacting gas, groceries, used cars. Now, inflation was a major problem for the Biden administration, and it's a big challenge for the Trump administration.
Inflation accelerates, and families still struggle with higher costs. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett blamed the latest numbers on the previous administration, adding,
so what we're doing is, at the top end, we're focusing on getting spending under control and having supply-side tax cuts and regulatory policies and drilling and so on, so that there's a lot of supply, reduced demand. That's how you get prices down.
The higher inflation numbers likely delaying further interest rate cuts. But President Trump writes, interest rates should be lowered, something which would go hand in hand with upcoming tariffs. Trump pledged to reduce prices during his presidential campaign, though most economists worry that his proposed tariffs could at least temporarily increase costs. The president also posting, Doge has found massive amounts of fraud, waste, incompetence, and abuse. Just yesterday in the Oval Office, Elon Musk, with his young son at his side, warns,
and they've also got to address the deficit. So we've got a $2 trillion deficit. And if we don't do something about this deficit, the country's going bankrupt.
Trump praised Musk's work with his Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. The president signed an executive order to expand Musk's influence and continue downsizing the federal workforce.
It's really astounding that the interest payments alone on the national debt exceed the Defense Department budget, which is shocking.
The Attorney General of Minnesota, just one of the critics, speaking out against Musk this week.
Americans expect that when their private information is in the hands of a trusted government entity, that is where it will stay. Not somebody who Donald Trump sort of chums around with and is buddies with.
Meanwhile, a new Marquette University poll finds most Americans favor Trump's plan to expand oil and gas production and his national emergency over immigration as well. However, the same poll found that most people oppose Trump's pardon of January 6 defendants, as well as the renaming the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. Meanwhile, President Trump's new Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, officially kicked off its presence on Capitol Hill today. The new House panel held its first hearing to reshape the federal government, and it was not without some fireworks. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story.
It was wild. Fireworks even before witnesses testified. Democrats made a number of shots across the bow claiming the legality of Elon Musk and President Trump's ability to downsize the federal government.
Donald Trump and Elon Musk are recklessly and illegally dismantling the federal government, shuttering federal agencies, firing federal workers, withholding funds vital to the safety and well-being of our communities, and hacking our sensitive data systems.
The way not to do it is to fire the people charged with the remit of waste, fraud, and abuse, namely inspectors general.
Republicans were quick to defend the president's actions.
The president of the United States has the prerogative to fire anyone that has overseen $36 trillion in debt enslaving the American people, and rightfully so.
The hearing follows Trump's claims that DOGE has uncovered tens of billions of dollars in fraud and abuse, blaming bad government contracts. A former FBI agent, along with fraud experts, testified.
I could spend the rest of my day providing countless examples of how taxpayer-funded programs are exploited, and the message would be the same. Investigators continue to be hamstrung by antiquated regulations, conflicting directives from federal agencies, and the lack of access to technology.
Most of its work can be undone by a future president with a stroke of a pen. To make President Trump's DOGE reforms permanent, Congress must act.
People got into the Medicaid system in a western state and stole $50 million in less than 4 months. So you have to have these controls in place, right? These aren't individuals stealing, Mr. Cloud. These are organized criminal groups, both domestic and transnational.
Democrats pointed out at least five inspector generals looking into Musk's businesses were fired, and cuts will harm Americans.
DOGE is trying to abolish the Department of Education. That means opportunities denied to kids. It means you're ripping away opportunities for children with disabilities who are dependent on this money.
The hearing comes amid protests by government workers who have brought lawsuits against the administration. A number of judges have ruled against or delayed Trump's actions, rulings which could end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Now to another government agency in upheaval. The National Institutes of Health is in a time of deep uncertainty, and its second-in-command, Lawrence Tabak, has abruptly resigned. No word on why he decided to leave. It comes on the heels of a fight over funding for the NIH. A federal judge ordered the Trump administration to hold off on a plan that would cut $4 billion in funding for research at the nation's universities, cancer centers, and hospitals. The action is in response to lawsuits filed by 22 states and a coalition of universities contending that the policy was illegal and would cause cutting-edge work to cure and treat human disease to grind to a halt. And for more, we are joined now by Dr. Omer Awan, professor at the University of Maryland Medical School. Doctor, thank you so much for being here. First, can you just give us a brief overview on the National Institutes of Health and what exactly it does?
The National Institute of Health is critical for safeguarding health and allowing for widespread dissemination of important research and information to the American public. So anytime there are important research studies that are published, they oversee those, and they oversee the ethics regarding those. They oversee how these research and this critical information is communicated to the general public. And, you know, this is particularly important with respect to all public health threats, infectious diseases, cancer. I mean, the list goes on and on. So you can see how widespread of an effect that the NIH has for American public health.
Yeah, and if these cuts are enacted, what type of impact will it have, and who could be impacted?
All of us would be impacted, really, if you think about it, because the impact is widespread. I mean, if we think about the threat of innovation and the threat of scientific progress being done, you know, even if we think about, you know, drugs for diabetes, you know, the GLP-1 agonist drugs like Ozempic, it's because of research that we know that these are amazing drugs for helping fight diabetes. It's because of research that we know that these drugs also help with weight loss, and this could have a significant effect on the obesity epidemic when you consider that 75% of Americans are either overweight or obese. When we talk about HIV and infectious diseases, because of these drugs, now people with HIV can live longer, and this has all been done because of research. If you remember 40 years ago, having HIV was essentially a death threat. So it has widespread implications, and everyone, it's not just scientists or doctors that are going to be affected. The entire public will be affected by these cuts.
I understand that these cuts specifically target indirect expenses. Can you talk to us more about that, and what does that entail?
So there's always direct costs and indirect costs. I think we have to understand what direct costs are as well. So direct costs are costs that are related specifically to research. So like laboratory or funding the salary of the scientist or the physician that's actually doing the research. Indirect costs are not specifically related directly to the research, but they can include things like office space, heating, electricity, salary support for administrative staff. All these things are crucial to do high quality research. If you don't have funding for indirect costs, it's not very pleasant to do research. And in fact, it hinders your ability to do research, and you often can't do research. So to make a cut to 15% of indirect costs, that's significant because remember, a lot of institutions get 65 to 70% for indirect costs. So when we're talking about millions of dollars that are being deposited for research, we're also talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars being cut per study, per research grant. So you can imagine the massive effect when you have indirect costs that are being brought down to 15%. It almost handcuffs scientists from doing research.
Well, Dr. Wan, thank you so much for weighing in. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tracy.
White inspectors general fired by the Trump administration are now suing to get their jobs back. Lawsuit claims the president broke federal law when he fired them without notifying Congress. Congress requires 30 days notice and an explanation for removing an inspectors general. The firings happened the first week of Trump's presidency. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin is asking the Department of Justice's Inspector General to investigate highly credible information that Kash Patel is already directing a purge of the FBI even before he is confirmed. Senator Durbin claims Patel's directives are being carried out by the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, along with members of the newly established FBI Director's Advisory Team. In a letter to Justice Department Inspector General, the senator said, quote, "I have received highly credible information from multiple sources that Kash Patel has been personally directing the ongoing purge of career civil servants at the Federal Bureau of Investigation." The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on Patel's nomination tomorrow and will likely send it to the Senate floor for a full confirmation vote. On this afternoon, the full Senate confirmed Tulsi Gabbard as the country's Director of National Intelligence.
Yeas are 52, nays are 48. Nomination is confirmed. Under the previous order, the motion to reconsider is considered, made, and laid upon the table, and the president will immediately notify of the Senate's actions.
Well, the only Republican to vote against her was Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Prior to the vote, Democrats raised questions about her views on Russia, ousted Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, and why she failed to call Edward Snowden, who leaked classified information, a traitor. Gabbard will now oversee the 18 agencies within the U.S. intel community, serving as the president's top advisor on intelligence matters. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including wild winter weather. Snowstorms blanket the eastern U.S. as thousands are left without power. And learn why California's insurance safety net has run out of cash. Winter storms have blanketed the eastern United States in snow, causing numerous traffic accidents and knocking out power to thousands. The storm, which stretched from Kentucky to Maryland, brought as much as 14 inches of snow to western Virginia. More than 190,000 customers in Virginia and almost 10,000 in North Carolina lost electricity. Meanwhile, more than 2,000 flights were canceled across the United States. Our California's state insurance safety net has run out of cash to pay for L.A. wildfire claims. The FAIR plan will not get a billion-dollar bailout after already paying out $914 million to policyholders. The FAIR plan is expecting a loss of around $4 billion. The bailout is the largest in the history of the plan and could raise the cost of home insurance for California homeowners. Well, turning now to the Midwest, on Tuesday in Illinois, DuPage County lawmakers voted to remove the name of Republican and pro-life advocate Henry Hyde from the county courthouse. Hyde, who was an Illinois congressman for more than 30 years, is best known for writing the Hyde Amendment, which bans the use of federal funds for abortions except in the cases of rape or incest or to save the life of a woman. According to the Charlotte Lozier Institute, the Hyde Amendment has saved more than 2.5 million lives since it was enacted back in 1976. And joining us now is Anthony Hyde, the late Congressman Henry Hyde's son. Anthony, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. When you first heard that there was going to be a vote to remove your late father's name from the courthouse, what went through your mind and your reaction now to it passing by a vote of 10 to 5?
Well, I was sad. I found out late Friday afternoon. We had heard rumblings of it for the last couple of years that it may come up. And I had always been willing to come and talk to anybody there at the board who had any problems or any questions to get down to it. But I never was able to meet with anybody. I didn't actively seek a meeting, but I offered myself my services and at any time. And then Friday, I got a call from one of my dad's former administrative legislative directors who told me about it. And we just started trying to prepare to go to the meeting. That it was on Tuesday, it was going to be Tuesday morning. I don't live too far from where the meeting was, so I was more than happy. I talked to my bosses at work, and they said, yeah, absolutely, go stand up for your dad. So that's what I did.
Yeah, I understand one Democratic lawmaker who supported removing your father's name from the building said that public buildings in DuPage County in part serve all people regardless of race, gender, faith, or economic status, and that the Hyde Amendment restricted health care rights of women who could not afford private insurance or pay for health care themselves, while a Republican who opposed the name be removed said this was partisanship and it was canceling in its purest form. Anthony, your thoughts on what shook out?
I do think it's cancel. I think it's part of the cancel culture. The only reason that the chair and the members of the board who voted in favor of stripping my father's name said the only reason they did so was because of his stance on abortion, and in particular, the Hyde Amendment. They did not want to, and when I made my little talk to them, I tried to bring up that my father was far more than just a one-issue politician. My father did a lot of great things for DuPage County. He brought millions of federal funding to the area, to the county, to help with flooding abatement. I-355 is there because of a large help from my father. My father was also somebody who helped families. He supported tax breaks and worked for tax breaks for low-income families and those with for children. He was a strong proponent of adoption services as an alternative to abortion. He went against his party in helping pass the assault weapons ban, which he took an awful lot of heat from because that was not the NRA was not very happy with him, and neither were many members of his Republican Party at the time. He was a proponent for Head Start programs. He understood that you can't care for the unborn child only, that you certainly need to care for the unborn child. But after 9 months, you just can't walk away and say, well, you're on your own. And so he was a proponent for Head Start programs, and he worked to do that, and he worked to help children with disabilities and all kinds of things. But they want to zero in. They do not like the Hyde Amendment, and they're very strong on the pro-choice. And so they wanted to take his name down.
Well, Anthony, very disappointing. We appreciate you coming on. Your father had quite the legacy, and we're grateful to him. And thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you, Tracy. You too. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, helpful tip: what the Holy Father says that we should all seek in order to find true peace. Plus, faithful finances. We discuss a new book that will teach you how to invest wisely and faithfully. Pope Francis reflects on the birth of Jesus in a stable in Bethlehem.
Io con la mia bronchite non posso ancora.
At the weekly talk, the Holy Father highlighted the humility of God who chose to be born in a manger because he is still suffering from bronchitis. The Pope entrusted the reading of his speech to his assistant. In his catechesis, the Holy Father invited the faithful to seek the grace of being capable of wonder and praise before God, as the shepherds were saying, it opens our hearts to joyful proclamation. Well, the world of finance is its own jungle. There's so much information available that it can be hard to get an idea of how to best invest your money. However, there is a new book that can help Catholics learn how to wisely and faithfully invest their money. And Chris McMahon, the author of Faithful Finances, joins us now. He's also the founder of Aquinas Wealth Advisors. Chris, great to be with you, my friend. I know you said part of the reason that you wrote this book is to respond to woke corporate activism. Tell us more about that.
Tracy, it's interesting. You know, for years they told us in the investment world, I had a secular firm, do not discuss politics, do not discuss faith. And I think where that got us, even though we became super Catholic. Over time, my bride and I became so involved with Legatus at the highest levels and the Sisters of Life and all these other things we're doing. I realized my business was still siloed and I was still silent about this important issue. And I think my bride, Molly, and I both came to the conclusion at the same time, we can't remain silent about this as this kind of wacko social activism that kind of was cooked up in the teacher's lounge at Middlebury. All of a sudden, it's been coming into the boardrooms. And these corporations, not only are they doing things that are contrary to our faith, they're actually condemning us for having this faith that's important to at least half the country. We said we can't do this any longer. We started the company that does faith-based investing, develops some technology, and ultimately that's where the book came from.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I know your first chapter, it deals with writing a family mission statement. Explain to us more about that and why that's so important.
It's such a good question, Tracy. The important thing is the fact we have to understand what's important to us. There are families that'll come in. We had a family that just the other day that was in the conference room. We said, what's the most important thing to you? And the husband said, no debt. And the wife said, the children's education. That's a pretty big disparity, right? Because in order to pay for the children's education, in his mind, he was saying, we don't want to pay for the children's education at the detriment of, to having any kind of debt. And the wife was saying very clearly, our first responsibility is to educate the children. That we find that over and over and over again, particularly with people of faith. We're finding people in different places in their journey, perhaps, and we see it even more so when people have different faith traditions, outside marriages. And we also see it with a kind of a lukewarm Catholic and then an on fire Catholic. But the great news is when we write this family mission statement, what it does oftentimes, we find common ground. It pulls these people together and gives them a common goal and mission. And then we can develop the roadmap to really have our values reflected in our financial plan.
I want to ask you this. I know you're really passionate about this. What do you hope, though, people gain from reading your book, especially couples?
Great question. I think ultimately, I think couples get a peace of mind that they're doing the right thing. So often people just feel so lost because they feel like they're doing the wrong thing. And when they feel lost, they have a tendency to turn away from the church, turn away from God. If, however, they know there's a pathway to get closer, it brings them closer to God, which is beautiful. And also, I think people are embarrassed, and we want that embarrassment to go away. And ultimately, Tracy, we want to change the world because we write corporations and say, we are forced to sell your stock because your company is paying for this, or your company Tracy, I can't tell you how many Catholic organizations and individuals are investing in pornography unknowingly. And I mean, really supporting it, investing in it in a big way. And we want to stop the degradation of women. You know, the dignity of the person is so important. And, you know, we're all created in God's image. And we as people, as leaders, and you do such, I want to salute you for the beautiful job you do as a leader in the church. We have to say, this is it. Something's important to us. This is critically important, and we will win this. We are winning it now, Tracy.
Yeah, and thank you for shedding light on all this, Chris. Before I let you go, tell folks where they can find this book.
So you can find it on Amazon. Now, I just found out today we were the number one self-help Catholic book on Amazon, which we're pretty happy about. So it's on Amazon. It's our good friends at Sophia Press published the book, and they can look on our website, AquinasWealth.com, because we have a link to the book is there as well.
Well, that is wonderful. Congratulations, and God bless you, Chris. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us.
God bless you. Thanks so much.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.